We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Jeff Erickson here. Today is April 15th. My guest slash co-host is Baseball Prospectus's Mike Gianella. Mike and I are in a couple leagues together and play in at least four different community leagues. Tout Wars, we're in against each other, but we also do labor. We do Raz Slam, and we also are in TGFBI. So lots to common ground there. And, of course, we're always back and forth with each other on Twitter. We had Mike on 2 years ago on the show. Happy to have him back again. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Has it really been 2 years? Time really flies. I thought it was last year, but it occurs to me last year with the short season that we didn't get to do this.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, the whole thing is with this podcast, I'm trying to get a different person every Thursday, right? Try to have wide representation from the fantasy baseball community, and ever-growing. And you just look at TGFBI, you look at a lot of the events out there, it's a wide, wide universe out there.
Yeah, I mean, we have the same challenge on our BP Flags Fly Forever podcast. I mean, if it were up to me, I'd love to have like everybody from TGFBI on, and then the balance is, having someone like you or Saris or someone that I know, there's that comfort level, so it's tough.
Yeah. It's great though. It's great. Like, I had Micah Henry on last week. He's awesome, and that's someone that is young too, and we're trying to get younger in this fantasy baseball world, and just draw from more people. So I think it's great that we have this opportunity. So I love it. A lot going on in baseball. What's going on in baseball? Are we going to have anything to talk about? Oh yeah, just another no hitter last night. Carlos Rodon came up hit by pitch in the ninth inning, away from a perfect game. What a wild story he was. He was actually non-tendered in December by the White Sox. Anybody could have had him. He re-signed in late January, retooled his mechanics. He's throwing 4 miles an hour harder than he did last year and was hit 98 and 99 on his last couple of pitches with all that adrenaline going. Anybody could have had him for the taking. It's kind of like when Edwin Encarnacion got DFA'd by the Blue Jays. The A's claimed him. A's tried to slip him through the 40-man, and the Jays claimed him back. There's a lot of coulda, woulda, shouldas out there.
Yeah, I was thinking about J.D. Martinez. He was another one, with the Tigers, and everybody, kind of made fun, and it's like, well, like anyone could have had him. I think in Rodon's case, a lot of injuries, a lot of inconsistency, and then later on, like some command issues as his walks per nine like just continued to spike. And I know what you're saying. Like, I'm a little surprised that nobody, that someone didn't take a stab on him. I do wonder what makes it a little bit tougher this year. Is a lack of lack of minor leagues. You only have the alternate sites. Mm-hmm. Some teams might have looked at it like, well, if we had a minor leagues to stash him in. I know they're playing some games now or some spring training at the alternate sites, but it might be a little more difficult. Still, seeing what he did last night and, looking even more so back at the potential he had, I'm a little surprised that one team, like say like the Pirates or a second division team, say, you know what, like let's see what we can do.
I laugh because I was just going to throw out the Pirates as the example. What's stopping them from taking a chance? You know, and there's like 10 teams in baseball. The Texas Rangers should have been all over this. You know, although it takes two. I mean, maybe they were trying to sign him, and he's like, no, I'm waiting. The Sox said they're going to sign me in January. It's just, you know, it could have been one of those unspoken things that we didn't know about, too. But, you know, nonetheless, missed opportunity for a half the league. And this is two great starts for him. He was really strong against Seattle, although he worked up his pitch count pretty high early in that one. But he's getting a lot of swing and miss right now, and that's the thing you'd love to see.
Yeah, and you know, again, Rodon is somebody I was pretty hot and heavy on back when he was, back when he was a prospect. And I'll admit, like I finally gave up on him just because you got to the point where you're like, yeah, you know, it just never looks like it's going to happen. It's kind of sad. I think a lot of this comes down to health. Like if he's healthy and he can stay healthy for, you know, in this season where we're not expecting a lot of pitchers to, you know, throw even 180 innings, if he can stay healthy for 130, 140 innings, I think he's going to be a pretty big asset.
I'd agree. And the thing is, you know, it is health, and it's patience with health. It's not just that, okay, he's hurt and he's coming back. It's okay, that first year he comes back, he's not going to have everything. Maybe not even all the second year, especially with last year being such a weird year. It almost takes like, you know, 3 years for you to, you know, it's hard to remain patient through that. And it's hard for us as fantasy players, especially when we're dealing with imperfect information.
Yeah, and you know, I think what's tough is, you know, unless you're in a dynasty with really, really deep reserve lists, you know, even in keeper, like, and this is my issue with Rodon way back when, like there was a contract clock, and I'm like, well, like how long can I, you know, keep extending him or, you know, pushing more of an investment into him? And that's what really makes it tough. The other piece too, you know, we see this with Don and Freddie Peralta. There's so many pitchers that kind of fall under the line, and you know, even in a 15-team mixed draft, that you kind of feel like, well, I'm going to find one of these guys, like even if I don't necessarily draft them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's smart. And you know, the thing is, you know, you keep on digging with that. You keep on trying to find like the next Devin Williams, as Scott Pianowski always likes to say, you know, don't try to jump on maybe that guy, but get the next one of those guys. Pay attention. And it might be the kid in Boston, for instance, the Rule 5 pick. And his name is escaping me with the, it will come to me by the time I finish my thought, but you know, it's just, the point is they're plentiful. You just have to keep looking to pop up. With starting pitchers, it's a little harder to find those guys.
Yeah, it's a little harder. I know with relievers, you're absolutely right. Like they're a dime a dozen, and you know, Scott's right. I had a feeling you were talking about Whitlock. I just didn't want to like say the wrong name. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, starting pitchers, it's a little more challenging unless you're in a standard mix. But you know, I think even so, I've kind of gotten ADP off my brain. But like Rodon, I know was like nowhere with ADP. Like everyone, if he was taken at all, like in TGFBI or NFBC, he was a reserve pick. Like he wasn't somebody who anyone was really even looking at. He was someone I think people were looking at in March of like, you know what, I'll take him on reserve. I'll see what he does for a start or maybe two starts. And if he stinks or he's hurt, I just cut him.
Yeah, and you know, Liss got him in Tout in the reserve rounds of AL and AL only league, crying out loud.
Yes,
it just shows you know how far off the radar he was for us this year. And he, you know, there were reports at the end of the spring training they had won the job, but you know, you really had to be kind of paying pretty close attention to that.
Yeah, I agree. And even so, like, you know, as a fifth starter in an American League team, like even an AL only, you know, given that park, you know, I know he's got a good team behind him and an improved defense. But in that park, you're kind of like, you know, maybe there's better plays I can make. I know an AL Tout for me, I already had a bunch of starters active and I purchased eight. I didn't want to add any more in reserve. I wanted to make all my closer plays there. I actually got Julie Merriweather, which I know you've praised me for offline, which, you know, right now he's hurt, but looked good for, you know, a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So some of that's just strategy too. Like, you know, some of that is like, well, like even an AL only, there's only so many like stabs I can take. Like my stab there was Casey Mize and like for a buck. And while Rodon right now looks better, I don't feel bad about Mize. Like,
no,
Mize
not
has been,
at all. Again, a pedigreed guy getting a chance, you know, struggled initially and struggled in spring training too, is the funny thing. And that's probably why you only got him for a buck.
Yeah.
You know, that also, and you know, that's why he didn't get brought up sooner. But yeah, so far so good as far as that goes. That was fun to watch him against the Astros. We'll talk more about that series in a second. Finishing up on this no-hitter, I mean, this game, There's a couple other stories in this one. Yermín Mercedes hit a ball that just landed in that game, the first inning. Just continues to crush. I got him in my home league, actually. That's the one place I was able to pick him up, and that was a close but spirited bid.
Was he UT or DH only there? Because yeah. I know just about everywhere except, I think, ESPN leagues where he's catcher eligible, he's DH only. Like, so I know I've gotten squeezed out in most places because, like you, I love Nelson Cruz. Mm-hmm. So my home league, he just wasn't an option. And most leagues aren't like Tout AL where you can carry like two DHs. So I really like Mercedes. And yeah, that's just why I don't have him. It's tough. Like, I noticed in Labor AL, which we're not in, only two or three people bid on him, and it was because like everybody already had a DH. Can't reserve people there, so
right. That was a big factor.
You always say this, like all politics is local. Like that's sometimes a large part of it. Like I could see somebody looking at Labor AL and going, why did Mercedes go for two, and why did nobody bid on him? It's like, well, you know, it's because eight teams literally couldn't bid on him.
That's right. That's right. And you know, the thing is, in my home league, I didn't have a DH, and we got a lot of weird rules in my AL home league. You have to qualify a DH. In other words, you had to have the number of, you can't just put anybody there. It's not a utility spot. It's actually a DH spot. It's also AL only 4x4, but with Milwaukee, because when we started this league, Milwaukee was still in the AL, and we have some Brewers fans in the league, so they kind of lobbied to keep it. But it's 4x4. It's instead of 260, we go $15 and use dime increments, except you can buy 20 players with your 15, or you could buy all, you know, 26, including your three reserves if you wanted to. I mean, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, that is interesting. My 4x4 is a little more traditional. Yeah, so I'm looking at the – I'm kind of curious to what other White Sox angles you want to talk about, because they certainly are
–
I mean, they certainly are an interesting team. I mean, a lot of young players there who, you know, I'm intrigued by. And then, you know, someone like Andrew Vaughn, where, you know, you think often he did play in that game, but, you know, he should be on a milk carton because he hasn't played that much.
Yeah, not as much as we'd like. It's like, why is he up if he's not playing every day, or at least three out of every 4 days? But – so that's tricky. The other news for them is Tim Anderson came back today and, of course, singled on the first pitch and has already scored a run. Getting him back is a big part of that team.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about him later when we check out of my leagues. But yeah, he's on one of my important teams, and yeah, it's good to have him back. And you know, the thing you always want to see with him, you know, he's defied the BABIP gods, you know, and the style of player he is, you wouldn't expect him to hit over 300, but he's done it. And, you know, I think the skill is there. Like, maybe I know this has been talked about in the preseason. He might not be a 320 hitter, but it's pretty easy to see him hitting like 280, 290 with just with the skill, bat to ball skills, you know, and how hard he hits the ball, you know, despite the low walk rate.
Right. The other angle in this game was Zach Plesac getting crushed. He went 2/3 of an inning, gave up 6 runs on 7 hits, including that homer. His ERA went from 138 to 527. All things considered, 527 to 132 isn't that bad in April. It's something you can recover from, but this particular outing was brutal.
Yeah, I mean, there's some pitchers, you know, I know Jacob deGrom, the Uri one, is, you know, Cy in a full season. I think he had a 405 one of those years, not a 527, but yeah, you can recover. And I'm not comparing Plesac to deGrom, just more building on your point that a 527 after two or three outings isn't fatal. But it was funny, I didn't even see the start because I went to turn the game on and he was coming out, and Steven, yeah. Trevor Steven, or is it Stefan? I'm not sure which was coming in. So I didn't even see it. So I can't even offer informed commentary on what Plesac did or didn't do. I guess there's a good thing to say is he didn't walk the park. So he was certainly throwing strikes. They were just hitting it.
He was giving rockets. They were all rockets. They weren't cheap hits, too. That was the thing that was interesting. You know, it was the first start he had that wasn't against Detroit. I mean, you could say it from looking at it from that angle. First tough start. You know, last year against the White Sox, he had mixed returns. He actually... His last start against the White Sox in September last year wasn't great, 4 runs and 6 2/3, but you'll live with that. 7 Ks he still got in that one. But he crushed the White Sox earlier on in that season. He had two really good outings against the White Sox, including the infamous one, I think, that led to him going on a night on the town afterward. But I don't have any Plesac this year because typically he was going sooner than I wanted to take him. I was pushing down Central Division pitchers. In particular, Cleveland scared me a little bit, even though just because the lineups they faced were so, you know, fantasy friendly. But Yeah, and not declaring victory on this one because the White Sox are really pretty tough.
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't have any Plesac, and I was lower than everybody else. But yeah, exactly. I don't want to go too far though on Plesac and say he's a bum. You know, he's going to put up a 4-5. I think he's a good pitcher. Like I was just expecting more of like a 3-5. You know, this year, like something in that ballpark. You know, as opposed to, you know, the ERA put up last year, which, you know, was a 2.28. And I think this is the thing about 2020. If somebody in eight starts puts up a 2.28. You're going to look at it and think it's, you know, unsustainable. I think a lot of people have looked at last year's numbers and go, ooh, you know, maybe he can put up a 3 or a 2.9. It's like, well, that's hard for almost any pitcher to do unless they're a true ace. And that's just it with Plesac. I think he's fine. I just don't think he's a true ace caliber on that level.
Yeah. And I have, I mean, I'm not that far off. I think I had like a late fifth round grade on him, maybe early sixth, which could have gotten him in some leagues, but
yeah, I agree.
I was one pick away from getting him in TGFBI. I think I took a hitter right before him because I was sitting at the two spot. So I was thinking I'd get him on the way back if he came to me. He did not come to me. Who knows? I might be regretting that later. Maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can trade for him and tout. I don't know who has him, but that's the nice thing about, you know, some of the leagues we're in is you can always make trades if you have some FOMO.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Or play DFS. One of those two. Just hopefully you didn't play DFS last night with him. He was on Larry Schechter's roster, by the way. Larry does trade, so it's possible. Let's move on. The other big story in baseball was the Houston Astros having five guys go on the IL yesterday for the league's, I want to get the phrasing right here. It's not necessarily, they didn't call it the COVID IL. They called it for the league's health and safety protocol concerns. We don't really know exactly what happened here. There's some suggestion maybe they reacted adversely to the vaccination itself. Lance McCullers was pitching sick in his reaction to the vaccine last night, although he didn't reveal that until the team until after the start.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. That's the first I'm hearing of that. I was kind of wondering, like, he didn't look quite right last night, and I thought maybe something was off. So, I mean, I'm not a doctor, I'm not sure what the reaction was, you know, or what happened to him. But yeah, like hearing that, it's like, oh, that kind of adds up. And you know, it was weird what happened yesterday, right? Like the news kind of broke. I think it was Brian McTaggart who broke that news, and it was him or another one of the Astros beats. But you know, you see that all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, like that just seems like such a big thing. And then you're right, like once you dive into it, it's not necessarily that serious. It's not like any player is going to be out for a long period, but it's more the unknown, right? It's more the idea of like, okay, well, what do I do? And in most leagues, like unless you're in a league with daily moves or deep rosters, what do you do? And even league with daily moves is tough because unless you have a deep reserve list or a limited IL, you're still kind of stuck because you're not going to cut Jose Altuve or Alex Bregman, you know, because they're going to be out for a few days. Like it just, you know, wouldn't compute.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, the tough part is like, you know, which is tough for us is more like the NFBC or, you know, TGFBI and where you have the moves on Friday for the weekend. Do you bench them or do you hope that they come back on Saturday? That's the tough part. We're hoping to just dig for the right information on that.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have some cases like, you know, my TGFBI, I already have so many players on reserve who are like injured that I don't even think I can do anything with Bregman, even if I wanted to. That's not quite true. I'm looking now. I could slide Votto to corner, I think, and put Gregory Polanco in. So yeah, that's the question. It's like, well, do I want 3 days of Gregory Polanco who has outside of yesterday really hasn't looked good? Or do I wait and hope that I maybe get a game out of Bregman?
That's a tough call. That's a tough call. It's a travel day today. I don't even know if they traveled with the team. So that'd be something to you know, keep an eye on. And just, you know, wait until the last, as late as you possibly can. You just have to figure out and, you know, exactly like who's going to be, who's going to be playing when and where. And that, you know, that reminds me to bring up the schedule, see if there are any day games tomorrow. I'm assuming the Cubs are at home, but it's early season. They may not. Friday night, Friday is almost all.
I think it's just the Cubs tomorrow, unless something has changed because of, it's just the Cubs.
Atlanta and the Cubs. That's the only day game tomorrow. Hey, it's a normal baseball day. Don't get me wrong. I love this slew of day games. I've actually thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, as someone who gets to work from home, that's really nice, and just being able to just throw it on while I'm working.
Yeah, I like it too. You know, my rule about games is I kind of wish there were like 2-day games just in case there's a rain out. Yeah. Like, so tomorrow, for example, if something, you know, goes wrong with the weather with the Cubs and you've got nothing, then it's like, like I was kind of banking on that one game and now I have nothing to watch.
Yeah, that's true also. You may just have to do work or something. I don't know.
Yeah, God forbid.
Can't allow that. Okay. But, you know, looking at the Astros as a whole, they got swept from by the Tigers. So it wasn't just yesterday. I mean, you mentioned Casey Mizer earlier. He threw a gem. Then Jake Odorizzi was getting homered against repeatedly by Akil Badu and others and friends. And then yesterday, of course, McCullers didn't have his best stuff, and he got knocked around pretty good.
Yeah, isn't it funny how like a week ago we were all talking about how bad the Athletics were, and I think I heard you and Scott Jensen. I know Scott's an A's fan, and you know he was despondent over the A's. And you know a week later, the Houston gets swept. They're 6-6. They're in third place. You know, coming into today in the AL West, and the A's are right there. The A's are a game behind them. The Angels are 7-5. It's wide open again. It just things. Things change in a hurry. That's always the thing with April, right? Like we're always like looking at what recently happened, but it's just we're still 12 games in. Like there's still so much that's going to change.
Red Sox have won 9 in a row after getting swept by the Orioles, but they're losing today to Michael Pineda, getting shut out 2-0 in the 6th. You know, things can change really quickly in this game, and that's part of the beauty of it.
I have Pineda on the bench in the one league I have him in, so I'm a little bummed out. I moved him just because of the postponement on Monday, and I wasn't sure it was happening, you know, with the staff there.
Sure. You know, in a situation like that, what do you root for? Do you root for him just knowing that, okay, yay, I'll have a good player, or do you want him to, like, not get the win just so you feel a little bit better about not having him active?
I mean, I'll be honest. If he can have the good performance and not get the win, that would be the best of both worlds. Like if he goes, you know, 6 innings, gives up a run, and it's a no decision, then you're kind of like, okay, well, you know, he had the good outing, but I didn't lose a win because you know, wins and saves this year, we know saves in particular, like they're so precious, like they're so hard to come by and figure out. So if you leave a win on your bench, if you leave a good outing on your bench, you're like, whatever. I mean, it happens. If you leave a win on your bench, you're like, I really, really could have used that.
I left David Peterson on my bench yesterday in 3 leagues. 10 Ks and a win.
Well, but I mean, the thing about that, I mean, I can't say I blame you. Like I had him active in labor NL cause I had to, but I don't blame you. Like he looked bad. Like there was no reason to really start him unless you're in an NL only. And even then, like if in labor, if I could have reserved him, I might have.
Yeah. Well, and you know, originally he was scheduled to do Monday against the Phillies and then this weekend against the Rockies in Coors Field. And then, of course, the suspended game happened on Sunday. They decided to bring Stroman back, you know, in 2 days instead of making him wait his full 5 days. That pushed Peterson back. So he instead he gets this one start. Still, Phillies knocked him around last time. Have a lot of good right-handed bats. You're like, I don't want any part of that. But you know, at least I'll have 2 starts from him next week, and he'll probably stink. But that's all right. I actually do like him. I like his skills a little bit.
Yeah, I do too. And it's really funny because I've heard a lot of people be like utterly dismissive of Peterson, and I don't oversell him. Like he's not the Ian Anderson, you know, Sixto Sanchez level by any means, but he has a future as like an SP3, SP4. Like he's got decent enough stuff that he's not just you know, if it works out, but he's not a fringe garbage pitcher. I think we kind of saw that last night. Like he went out and dominated a pretty good lineup. Like it wasn't like he, you know, went out and dominated the Rangers or the Pirates or, you know, a crummy team.
Right. He outdueled Wheeler in this one. It was pretty impressive. So by the way, that rain up today means DeGrom has to go in Coors Field instead. And Eflin gets pushed on another day too. But I'm big on Eflin this year. I have him in a lot of places.
Yeah, he's one of my biggest FOMO guys. Like, I really liked him coming in and somehow got him nowhere. And, you know, some of that was in 2 of my NL leagues. I just spent – well, in one of them, he came out really early, and I didn't want to, like, spend on him at that point. And in labor, you know, with the Stars and Scrubs I did, I was just out of money. So, yeah, little FOMO with him. I really wish I had him more than I do, which is I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate it when that happens. You know, and that's – Yeah. But you know what? That's why DFS exists. You know, I feel like it's better than that than adding yet another league.
Yeah, it's funny. I you know, Vlad Guerrero Jr., I thought he was overpriced everywhere, and I don't have him anywhere. And I play him constantly DFS because I really like him, you know, as a player. I just didn't, you know, want to pay, like, you know, the 30-plus he was going for in salary cap draft leagues, or, you know, the fourth or fifth round price that he was going for in draft leagues.
Right. Got a handful of injuries to go through real quick. Byron Buxton out of the lineup again today. He's dealing with mild, like, soreness in his hamstring. They keep on trying to downplay it there. Are you worried at all?
I think you always have to worry a little bit with Buxton, just because, you know, I'm not a believer in injury prone, but he is a player who, you know, plays hard. You know, we know his history. We know he's, you know, I think my bigger worry with Buxton, he's going to come back too soon and aggravated and miss a long period. Like, look, we know the talent is there with him. We know he can potentially be a great player. He's just never outside of, I think, you know, and I'm like looking up as we're talking, I think outside of one season, yeah, he's never played more than like 92 games in a season. So that's the piece you're always worried about with Buxton. I don't think this injury is necessarily going to, you know, keep him out for that long. I just hope he doesn't rush back.
Yeah. Well, and today sitting out is maybe a good illustration of the Twins' desire to be that way, too, because it was tightness in his hamstring. There was a lot of if it mattered, he could have sort of talk, you know, or something like that. Not that I'm overstating the case of what the phraseology they use. They didn't use those words, but yeah, you know, I think that is, they did a good job of kind of using some restraint with him. Although when you have him in a league, you don't like seeing it. But then again, maybe you do because you're getting him in the long run. Let's keep moving on this one here. You mentioned Julian Merriweather. You have him in AL Tout Wars. He's on the IL. Is it Jordan Romano again? I mean, they haven't actually announced a closer, have they?
No, they really haven't. And like, even with, you know, Merriweather, as great as he's looked, like he never was really announced as the closer. It still feels more like a situational team. If anything, because of what happened with Merriweather, I'm more reluctant to just buy in Romano and say he's the closer. I would guess he is. And you know, it's one of those situations where hopefully you didn't drop Romano if you had him already, you know, outside of like a standard mix. I'd have to think Romano's a favorite just because the bullpen is thin enough. You know, I know some people like Dolis, but I have to think it's Romano. But yeah, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, if he was dropped, like put a big fat like fab bit on him, assuming he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one there. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Dolis came into the game yesterday in the eighth inning of that Yankees game. It was a tie game, but you know that's a tiny indicator of like how they intend to do the usage.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I would guess. And, you know, the thing with Romano that got everyone a tizzy with Merriweather is, you know, Romano came in that one game a couple weeks ago, you know, faced the top of the Yankee order. And then, you know, Merriweather facing was 4-5-6 in that game. People are like, oh, you know, Romano's facing the best part of the order. It's like, well, I mean, the Yankees 4-5-6 hitters aren't slouches. It's not like, you know, they brought Merriweather in to face like the bottom of the Rangers order or something like that. So, yeah, I'd guess it's Romano, but it just such a... I kind of look at that bullpen. It could be David Phelps. It could be Ryan Borucki. I got to think it's going to be Romano, though. But again, I wouldn't go like whole hog on him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And probably wasn't dropped yet in most leagues anyhow. So we'll see. Kendall Graveman got the save today against the Orioles. Rafael Montero pitched the sixth. I have Montero in one league, but we could see this one coming. When he blew the save the other day against the Orioles in their first doubleheader on Tuesday. Now this is another seven-inning game. This is the first game. He pitched the sixth, and Graveman pitched the seventh.
Yeah, so you were mentioning like young people, you know, or people who are kind of worth following. I want to mention him, and I don't want to get him wrong. So it's Mikey Ahedo of Pitcher List. I don't know if you know who that is.
I do.
But he was all over. It's DYSTHY Mikey on Twitter, by the way. He was all over Graveman, like very early, like at the beginning of the season. He's like, this is for real. You know, he's throwing 99 out of the bullpen. He's the guy. He's going to take over. It's not going to be Middleton. And I have to admit, I thought it'd be Middleton before, you know, if they made a move or a replacement. So yeah, I think Graveman is the closer now, and I have him in three leagues. Unfortunately, I don't have him in Tout. I'm kind of bummed about that. I kind of knew it was going to be him and didn't bid aggressively enough like the first week. But yeah, I think Graveman is the guy, and the skills are there too with him that I don't see him giving up the job, like barring injury.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one there. I mean, I think it's his now. And so possession is 9/10 of the law, as Chris likes to always say on the XM show. It's pretty clear that's the hierarchy. So we'll see how it goes. You know, Marco Gonzalez got his first win. He looked terrible in the first inning of this game, and then shut him down for four more innings after that. And, you know, I don't love seven-inning doubleheaders. I'm okay with it. You know, I had another Twitter thread going. I was like, give me the seven. I'll take the seven-inning doubleheaders if we can get rid of the man on second base in the extra innings. That's how I feel about those new rules. What do you think?
Oh, I could not agree more. I mean, I get the seven-inning doubleheaders. And honestly, if you really are interested in making games shorter, not that I want this, I'd rather have all seven-inning games than the goofiness of a runner on second base in the 10th inning. It's so – give me ties even. I'd rather take a tie after, say, 11 or 12 innings than this. It just doesn't feel like baseball. It feels, you know, almost like having a home run hitting contest or, you know, a pass, you know, punt and kick competition in the NFL. It just doesn't quite feel right.
Yep. I understand that you don't want to, like, tax the bullpen too much, but my goodness, there's 13 pitchers, 14 pitchers on every active roster now. How taxing can it be?
Yeah, I think with COVID last year and, you know, it being more prevalent and cases being higher, I understood. This year, right now, it makes some sense, but as we get into the, you know, hopefully, you know, we don't need to get into, you know, Anderson Simmons and all that. Hopefully, as the majority of players, you know, get vaccinated and COVID's less prevalent in MLB, then this won't be an issue. So I kind of wish they could change this mid-year. I just know they won't.
Right. Well, I kind of think these are here to stay. I think they're.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like a lot of rules, you know, that are often considered temporary emergency rules in all walks of life, they have a nagging tendency to stick around.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a chip in the next CBA, but it doesn't seem like something the players are necessarily going to push back on. And I think the intent of both of the rules makes sense. Like, I kind of get the idea if you're a player, you don't want to be playing a regular season game that's 5 or 6 hours long. I know it rarely happens, but I get that. I just wish, again, I just wish there were a better way to fix this than the runner on second in extra innings.
Same here. Another injury note, Max Fried goes on the IL. Speaking of rule changes, he hurt himself running the bases. I mean, I'm kind of a mixed emotions here, though. I mean, pitchers should be able to run. I mean, running isn't really a skill. I guess maybe there's a burst issue, maybe something like that. But I don't think this is necessarily a bullet point in favor of the universal DH, even though I'm in favor of the universal DH.
Yeah, so I'm with you, and the reason I want a universal DH is pitchers stink at hitting.
Right.
And you know, we talk about entertainment and all that. I don't want to watch a pitcher. And yeah, I know once in a while, like Jacob deGrom hits a home run or Jake Arrieta hits a home run. But, you know, it's like the once in a while, you know, a position player pitching, there's a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Generally, it's just not entertaining. Yeah, and as far as the injury piece goes, I get it. Like, pitchers – you know, sometimes get hurt. I feel like it's anecdotal, though, and it's just one of those things where, like, for example, when Eloy Jimenez got hurt in spring training, nobody shouted, oh, he's a bad fielder. Like, he shouldn't play the field. There should
actually
be multiple. Well, okay, I missed that, I guess.
But I have some White Sox stands that were that way. And honestly, he's does have a rep as a bad fielder.
Right. But I guess my broader point is there wasn't like a broad feeling of like let's have four designated fielders, you know, let's do this, let's do that, let's revamp the game. I don't think pitchers should hit because they stink at hitting. You know, as far as the injury thing goes, I feel like that's very anecdotal. And yes, pitchers do get hurt batting. They also get hurt fielding, though. And, you know, should we have designated fielders or like a dead zone around the pitcher's mound because pitchers are that valuable? Because
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's really what the argument is. The argument is pitchers are so valuable at their skill pitching, and we love to watch great pitchers pitch, that we don't ever want to see them get hurt, like running the bases or batting. And it's like, oh, well, I get that. But like, if you feel they're that valuable, you probably need to do that too. You probably need to put up like a, you know, like a cage around them, or, you know, at least a shield around them on the mound, and make that a dead zone where it's a dead ball if a ball gets it back to them. Which again, really isn't, I'm not suggesting that, it really isn't baseball, but if you really feel that strongly, like that's the solution, no?
Right. I agree. I think that's right. Let's move on.
Like any good team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications, and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
Okay, let's move on real quick here. Before we get to look at your labor tout and TGFBI and Razzlam leagues, I want to talk about the Atlantic League. It frequently is used as a little bit of a laboratory for new rules or new setups. And one of those is there's 2 rules they're using for this season. One of which is the idea that halfway through the season, they're going to move the mound back by a foot. So instead of 60 feet, 6 inches, it'll be 61 feet, 6 inches. The idea here is to try to give the hitters a little bit of a help. Batting average has been on a long decline. League-wide batting average is .235. Strikeouts have been going up for 15 years. Every single year it's been going up. Velocity is way up across the board. I see the motivation for all this. I actually think I kind of like this rule change. What do you think?
I like it in theory. I do worry a little bit about the law of unintended consequences, and it may be going too far the other way. So it's not just the strikeouts. So the big issue in baseball is the lack of balls in play, or the lack of action, or at least that's one of the issues, is that lots of strikeouts, lots of home runs, lots of walks, and you know, for you and I who love baseball and can appreciate the nuances, I don't think we care. But I think for a young fan trying to get the game, like you just feel like you're sitting around watching nothing, right? Or watching, you know, the pitcher and catcher play catch, and then a home run where, you know, guy trots around the bases. So I feel like you're fixing part of the problem where you're lowering the strikeouts. But unless you're going to revamp, like, you know, the ball, or, you know, move the fences back 40 or 50 feet, so that there's more doubles and triples as opposed to home runs, I feel like you're only fixing some of the problem, right? Because you're still going to have like the walks, you're still going to have the home runs. So I think it's an interesting idea, and I'd kind of like to see it explored in this, you know, in the Atlantic League in an experimental way.
Right.
I'm just not sure how it's going to actually work, or if it's going to necessarily like fix the issue of not enough action. I think it just might shift it to more home runs as opposed to the strikeouts.
Yeah, maybe so. I just want more contact in the game. I just want fewer strikeouts, fewer walks, more balls in play. Although I guess, you know, if defense and shifting is so good, that's a big aspect of, you know, doing well with balls in play as well. But I think that, you know, I as much as, you know, you write for BP, I write for RotoWire, and, you know, both of us have been in favor of a lot of analytical advancements in the game. I think in a way the game is a little less fun to watch right now than it has been in the past. There's too much three true outcomes.
Yeah, although, you know, I think part of it too though is the analytic bent has led to teams like tanking, you know, led to teams not trying. I think some of these problems that we see, you know, still tie back to the fact, like, look at the, like, we kind of look at the no hitters that we've had, you know, and the Joe Musgrove no hitter in particular against a Rangers team that really is fielding a terrible team and a terrible offense in particular. I'm not taking anything away from Joe Musgrove,
right,
but I think that's kind of what we're seeing. Like, we're seeing more of this imbalance, like, across the board, where, you know, part of the reason some of these pitchers are racking up the strikeouts or these great performances is they're facing lineups that, quite honestly, would not have been as bad even at the bottom. You know, it used to be you everybody tried to win, and or at least tried to win 65, 70 games, put a competitive team on the field. The imperative for that isn't really there anymore, and some of it is, you know, analytics. But I think some of the teams figured out, like, well, we can make just as much money winning 55 games as we can winning 75.
Yeah, and I get that to a certain extent. It depends on if you're backing that up with investments in your farm system, investments in the international players, things of that nature, as opposed to just selling off players. Like, I'm not going to call out any teams pirates or anything like that. But, you know, it's the other thing that's kind of weird, too, is, you know, the Rangers just opened a new ballpark. Usually teams, it used to be when you get a new ballpark, you kind of try to ramp up to be good in that first season in the new ballpark. That's no longer seems to be a concern.
Yeah, and I think some of it, you know, to think of even a good model like the White Sox, who, you know, look like a fun and competitive team right now, they probably were a year or two later than you would have expected, or at least I would have expected. And there was a similar situation. You know, they had a, you know, kind of an exciting situation, like newer ballpark, and you thought, oh, they're going to start spending, and they kind of waited a year or two to spend, and they certainly did it. And to your point, I think they did things the right way with some of the, you know, young talent they brought in. You know, some of the, you know, foreign imports and, you know, some of the trades they made. But it's still, I think it's frustrating as a fan because you're like, I want to see, like, more action on the field. Like, something I think I sent this note to you, like, you know, pre-show as far as averages dropping. Averages in April are actually lower, like, than they are,
sure,
you know, over the course of the season. Like, and I think the last 4 years, they were from 0.004 to 0.008 lower. So the averages should eventually jump up. Don't get me wrong, they're still low, and it's definitely a trend. But something I can't help thinking that's tied into are, you know, players, you know, who are held down for service time where you don't see them for the first month or see them first couple of weeks. You know, and we see some of these players in lineups right now where it's like, yeah, this guy really wouldn't be there if we didn't have these service time concerns. Again, it's not all of it. I'm not saying that's the reason for, you know, in 0.008 like difference in batting average. But it was definitely something to think about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we didn't have an April or May last year. We jumped right into July. So late July, as far as that goes. So yeah, the other rule they're doing is tying the DH to the starting pitcher. When you take out the starting pitcher, the team loses their DH. Ideas are trying to get teams to use the starting pitcher later, maybe discourage them from using an opener. I don't hate the opener, Mike. I don't love it, but I definitely don't hate it. And I think it's kind of gimmicky, this rule. I want to see fewer, as we were saying earlier, pitchers stink at hitting. Why do I want to see more of that?
Yeah, I think the other problem with this, too, is that if you're going to do this, and this is even true, if you're going to keep the pitcher hitting and not have a universal DH, you know, you're old enough to remember, you really need to go back to having like 14 or 15 hitters overall with like six or seven hitters on the bench.
Yep.
part of what made the NL game fun wasn't the pitcher hitting. It was the idea of double, like true double switches, you know, even the strategy where, you know, the manager bringing a lefty to face the righty, you know, the other manager bringing a pitcher, you know, pitching change. And then you have someone pinch hit where, you know, that first hitter never even got into the game. And as a kid, I remember being like, wow, like this is great. Like this is, you know, this is chess. This is fun. And now with like four hitters on the bench, you've already got a problem where it's just a dreaded game of like pinch hitter, pinch hitter, pinch hitter. Oh, great. A pitcher is going to pinch hit for another pitcher because the bench is empty.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. I feel like this
on the bench and one of those is a catcher.
Well, as a catcher, right. So I feel like this is just going to kind of exacerbate that. And unfortunately, I think what it's trying to do is it's trying to get teams to be like, all right, well, stick with your starter for, you know, six, seven innings, whatever. It's like, well, I don't think teams are going to do that. I think teams still look at it like, well, the starter is not as efficient the third time through the lineup. We just want to pull him. So it's just going to lead to more DHs, you know, not hitting. And yeah, I like watching JD Martinez and Nelson Cruz hit. Like, why do I want to see them out of the game in the sixth inning?
Yeah. And I think it's also, I think it's more like, yeah, and that is annoying. That is really annoying. Now, this is, hopefully this doesn't get out of the Atlantic League. And maybe this is like they want to see their pitchers develop more and you're trying to discourage openers in the minor leagues or something, I guess. I don't know. Just throwing that out there. But anyhow, that one is those are the two ones. They experimented with robot umps last year. There's been other experiments that they've done in the past. It's kind of a fun league to do that. Quick note from our friends at Underdog. Football season approaches and you've got to check out these new best ball leagues on Underdog. Best ball is the ultimate test of your live draft skills since there's no in-season management. That's right. Draft your team and Underdog automatically credits you with your best performing players every week. You don't need to play the waiver wire or worry about trades. It's just the draft. Who doesn't love drafting? In Underdog best ball, you can draft as many times as you want because you don't have to do any roster management, saving you loads of time. Underdog's best ball leagues are drafting right now, starting at just $3. Once the season starts, Underdog also has daily fantasy and an all-new pick'em game. Go download the Underdog app now to get in on some best ball before the season starts. Enter promo code ROTOWIRE with your first deposit, and Underdog will honor a money-back guarantee during your first month. Love Underdog or get your money back with promo code ROTOWIRE. Search Underdog in your app store and enter promo code ROTOWIRE. All right, I'm Jeff Erickson. I'm here with Mike Gianella from Baseball Prospectus. Mike, let's talk expert leagues. We just did a read for a best ball league. One of the ones that you and I are both doing is Raz Slam, which is modeled after the NFBC cut line. It's a points league. It's best ball. And we had two very different drafts. Obviously, we're not in the same league. Ours was very hitter heavy. Yours was somewhat pitcher heavy. It was similar to more of the season long drafts that we're in. How's it going so far there?
It's going okay. I think I'm in a tough league in the sense that I think I'm in fourth or fifth. I'm pulling it up now, but I'm kind of on the I'm in fifth, but I'm like 71st overall, which isn't bad. Like given how many teams there are, you know, overall at all the Raz Slams. I've had some injuries early. Bellinger, you know, we mentioned Bregman. But the funny thing about the approach, you know, you mentioned this with pitching, so I didn't take pitching until like the seventh or eighth round. I think Zach Greinke is my ace. But I went deep in pitching. So I have Steve Matz. Like I have a couple other pitchers like that who have worked out really well. And that's kind of the key to these contests is, yeah, the players on top are certainly important, but it's the volume that matters. And, you know, if you can get some like plays late, like Steve Matz, someone I wouldn't have touched in a non best ball league, but a league like this, I'm like, well, you know, if he works out and there's still something left, great. If there isn't, I cut him in the first fab period, which we just had on Tuesday.
Right. And so who did you end up getting in fab and who did you end up cutting?
I was more conservative in fab than I should have been, perhaps because I didn't get that much. I cut, let's see, Julio Teheran. Like I mostly cut injured players. So I cut Kirby Yates. unfortunately, you know, he was my first or second closer. Yeah. So yeah, most of my cuts were easy. Like, so I cut Kirby Yates. I cut Julio Teheran. I cut Josh Lindblom. I cut Joaquin Soria. And then I cut Orlando Arcia, who I think was my last or next to last pick. So, yeah, and players I got weren't that exciting. I got Donovan Solano, which again in this league where volume kind of matters and also hot hand matters, it's nice because if Solano's a great week, he's in my lineup. If he doesn't, you know, he replaced Arcia and he's probably just on my bench. I got a Trevor Cahill. Probably the one big player I got was Kendall Graveman, who I got for a buck. We were just talking about him. And he was my eighth choice of like all these different like closers that were on my list. So I was pretty happy getting Graveman for a buck. I think he's going to wind up closing.
Yeah, that's why you fill out your seventh and eighth options. Sometimes they work out, and especially in a best ball where you want to have every single roster spot being employed in some sort of form. I think that's great. I picked up Lou Trevino and I picked up Zach McKinstry, which that one went unopposed, which frankly I was a little surprised about. That I got him for I way overpaid for him, kind of for 115, but I know playing time is a concern with him. But again, yeah. it's best ball, so all it has to do is like get a hot week, and he can. If he's not making outs and has two or three good games, that's probably going to be good for your lineup that week.
Yeah, but best ball really makes you think differently because I think in like other leagues, you're like, oh, you know, if he's a flash in the pan or if he's a part timer, he's not worth it. But you're absolutely right. Like all it takes is if McKinstry's worth it for two or three weeks and has a strong two or three weeks, that's great in this kind of league.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, that's what I end up doing. I'm middle of the pack in my league right now, probably middle of the pack overall, just mediocre start so far. I was off to a pretty good, actually mediocre last week or so, the first week or so of the season I was on fire, but I guess that's why we are only 2.5 weeks into the season.
Yeah, it's still really early, and unless you're like, you know, way at the bottom or, you know, way at the top, I don't think there's too much to, you know, it's not worth obsessing.
Yeah, it's a fun league. It's a fun format. I don't play in points leagues. I don't play in any head-to-head. It's just the way I was reared was on Roto. I know a lot of people that are new to the game or newer to the game, you know, were reared on points leagues, so it's a little bit different. And I see the merit for them. Like, you know, Mike was bringing up a point. You know, in Roto, there's very little to distinguish between the positive effect of a single and a double. However, you know, minus, you know, of course, you know, double and triple, you know, gives you greater RBI and run expectations. But the actual hit itself, there's no difference. And yet they're clearly better outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I like Roto and as much as I like the category movement, I do like that fact. I also, you know, something about this format I like is I like the idea that, you know, if a pitcher has a bad outing or an awful outing, you're just not going to see it on your roster unless you only drafted 10 or 11 pitchers or had a lot of injuries. But that's something I like. You don't have to worry. It's like, oh, you know, my pitcher gave up 6 runs in 2 innings. It's going to hurt me. It's like, no, it won't. Not in Razz Slam.
No. Yeah. It hurts you because it's just one guy that you can't use that week. But
yeah,
it doesn't have everlasting damage either. Unlike the Plesac outing yesterday, which will leave a mark for a while. Mm-hmm. I think that's the difference there. All right, let's move on to same platform, different format, TGFBI, also being run on the NFBC platform. How are you doing there? What did you do to start your league? I know you have. Is that the league where you have a bunch of injuries? Right.
It is, and so the funny thing in that league is I'm in sixth place in my league, but what's hilarious is my hitting is awful. I've got 11 hitting points, ooh, and I've, you know, in my league, but I have 71 pitching points. So the pitching has been phenomenal. The closers, I've got Craig Kimbrell and Jake McGee, so I can't complain at all.
No.
And, you know, I've got Garrett Cole, I've got Young Jing Ryu at the top of the staff, along with pitchers who, outside of Charlie Morton's bad outing yesterday, my pitching has been great. Hitting is just where I'm really suffering. So my top three hitters were Alberto Mondesi, Tim Anderson, who we talked about before, and Alex Bregman. I know Bregman just went on the IL, but it's just a rough beat where like no one's really performing. I got CJ Cron, who everybody was like kind of glad handing themselves about and high fiving, you know, over. He's done nothing. I know it's early. I know things can turn around, but yeah, 11 points this early kind of makes me a little bit nervous just because not right now, but I do really need a week where my hitters like pick it up and, you know, just go off.
Yeah. I hear you on that. My TGFBI, I got the Pomerantz and Melanson combo. Remember, this is early February. I'm like, okay, I'm good. And then those rumblings in March came. Oh, it's going to be Pagan. I'm like, ah. And I left Melanson on my bench that first week, missed out on two saves, but long run, I won't complain too much because that was still a windfall in a way. But all in all, pretty competitive team. I'm fourth in my league, and Ariel Cohen's in this league. It's a tough league. Dan Strafford's in this league. Justin Mason. It's actually Justin Mason's league too. So it's a tough league. Ian Khan's in the league. Corbin Scott Young. Some good players are in this league.
Yeah, same thing in mind. There's some good players, and like the names people probably know are Nick Pollock of Pitcher List and Al Melchior. So there's always like two or three people in these leagues like, oh, I know these names. And, you know, when you get the draw, I remember Al in my draft was like right next to me. And I swear, like every pick he either sniped me or I'm like, oh, like maybe that's the pick I should have made. So, yeah.
Yeah. Don't you love it when you question yourself on that? So that's always good times. Indeed. Mm-hmm. But 2 weeks ago, I got second placed on all four of my fab bids. And I put in like, I only put in like significant player, like, you know, not, you know, all players, are, you know, there were no $1 bids. Let's put it that way. You know, going back to your example of Graveman, maybe I should have done a better job of that, getting the depth guys. But I tried to stay calm on my bids, calm enough that I won second place in all my bids there. So that was fun.
Yeah, it's funny though, because like for me, I got Merriweather in mine, and I think I had the second lowest winning bid in all the TGFBIs of like 113. Wow. Like it was kind of a show me bid. Like I didn't think I'd get him, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's all right. And of course, now he's hurt, so you know you kind of go back and forth, and then I think I spent 22 on Chris Davinsky, which at the time I thought, oh, that's okay. And of course, you know he's gone, and I already cut him. So yeah, that's just the nature of Fab sometimes, and I think that's why unless I'm really certain about somebody, I don't go like $400 or $500 on like one player, you know, just because like, you know, Merriweather looked great. And, you know, I think people who spent $300, $350 on him, I wasn't questioning them, but now you sort of wonder, it's like, you know, do you hang on to Julian Merriweather for 3 or 4 weeks? And if you spend that much, I think you almost have to, right? Like, I know it sounds weird, but it'd be kind of weird to cut him if you made that kind of investment.
Right. All right. I get you on that. I kind of feel the same way. I mean, you know, in theory, we should be arguing that cost is already sunk. If he's truly valueless, you send him away. But he's not truly valueless. He's just out right now. When he comes back, he could go back to closing games, for all we know. Unless, you know, Romano runs with it and goes 7-for-7 or something like that, which also could happen, by the way. But in which case, then I think then you're a lot more justified in making that quicker cut. But yeah, it is fun on that, trying to deal with that. In mixed labor, I want a similar bid on Emmanuel Clase, actually. Labor, as you know, has much more restrictive fab rules, but I want him for 23. I think someone else also had 23, but my good fortune, I was lower in the standings, so yay, I won a tiebreaker that way.
Yeah, I heard you and Fred talking about that, and I think you've been pretty aggressive in that league so far, right? Yeah, I'm looking at you overall. Like so you're in 10th in labor mix, but you're not way down. Like it looks like there's a big clump of teams right ahead of you.
Right. That's kind of the way it went. And I've been aggressive in Fab. I always am, and I always tell myself, well, I'm going to be patient. And then Clase comes around, and you're like, I got to get him. I mean, because then I don't have to worry about closes the rest of the way. I'm fine, right? Except Karinchak got to save an extra innings the other day. But I think that's only because Clase pitched the day before.
Yeah, it again, closers are so unpredictable. Like, you know, we're all talking about the Marlins, and you know, I'm looking today as they're playing. It looks like Dylan Floro is in to close, and you're just like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still, you know, Yimmy, but you're just shaking.
He pitched the last 2 days. That's why.
Yeah. Okay. That's why. So that makes some sense. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he got the save yesterday, and then in that extra inning game, he went like 1 1/3. I may have been last 3 days. Point is, I think he's down today.
Yeah, and it's April too, and you know it's April coming up the short season, so teams aren't going to push someone to the extreme.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the Braves have loaded the bases with no outs against Floro too, so there's that. Same thing as AJ Minter is the guy that blew the save for the Braves in the top of the ninth. I think it's because Will Smith had been active the last couple of days.
So. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
I think that's the case. I need to double check on that. Make sure there's no injury.
Yeah, I'm laughing because you were talking about TGFBI. So I told you pre-show, you know, I sat Michael Pineda, and of course, because of the uncertainty, because of the cancellation on Monday, of course, he goes out and 7 innings, 3 base runners, 6 strikeouts. So yeah, I feel great about that.
Yeah. Good times indeed. Yeah, Will Smith had pitched 4 of the last 5 days, so I'm not surprised. You know, he was out, and Chris Martin on the IL. That's why Minter got the chance and coughed it up, gave up two runs. And now it looks like Floro is going to do the same. We'll see about that. Finally, we still have two more. Let's go Labor. I was doing the commentary on Zoom for Baseball HQ's First Pitch Florida while you guys were doing the AL Labor salary cap draft. And it was – no, NL, excuse me, NL Labor salary cap draft. And I was watching you do your thing, and you're going stars and scrubs, which is because I compete against you in Tout Wars. I think you had been more of a spread the risk guy against me. So I was like, oh, this is different. This is a different Mike. I like it, but it's different.
Yeah, I think some of it was the nature of the online room, and some folks were not getting to their bids fast enough. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, there's one or two players that I like Walker Buehler, but I kind of wish I had like two pitchers like in the 14, like the $13 range as opposed to Buehler. The same thing with the hitting. Like I think it was Will Myers at the end. Will Myers has been good, you know, pre-injury, but like there were one or two hitters I kind of wish I had instead of just him. But yeah, honestly, it's worked out better so far than I would have expected. And some of that is like some of the low end Brewers I've gotten, like Travis Shaw playing. Even Eric Gonzalez, you know, I know, if you're in a mixed league, like who cares about him, but he's playing enough with the Cabrian Hayes injury that for an NL only at a buck, he's been productive, you know, 8 runs batted in and, you know, average hasn't hurt me. And on the pitching side, you know, Jacob deGrom forgives a lot, but it's not just him. Like it's for the most part outside of Chad Kuhl. I've gotten some pretty solid performances from like my back end pitcher. So it's early. But you know, it's better to be doing well early than doing poorly. And like right now I'm sitting in second place, although it's precarious. I could be in, you know, fifth by the time today's over. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with the start given the stars and scrubs. It hasn't gone the other way where I've got like two or three injuries and the scrubs like aren't playing. Like outside of Josh Rojas, who I got in that league for a buck before the hype even started on him. Most of the scrubs have worked out. At a buck, you're like, well, you know, if he didn't work out, like, so what? I'll find somebody else at some point.
Right. Now, closers. I mean, that's, you know, when you did your draft strategy, you kind of had to kind of, something had to give. And for you, it was closers. You have Daniel Bard, and, you know, he hasn't had that many opportunities. The Rockies appear to be one of those special bad teams. But, you know, I think there's a lot of people like that in your league. It's not like, you know, having two saves this point in the season isn't such a bad thing.
Yeah, I think I'm sixth or tied for sixth in saves, and it is because there's extremes. Like there's a couple teams that have like 11 or 9 saves, and a lot have 0, 1, or 2. And yeah, I wish I had another closer. And you know, I kind of drafted, you know, Sean Doolittle. Like, and this is when Amir Garrett and Lucas Sims were both hurt. Thinking, well, if they're both hurt, he might like, you know, pick up a save or two. He hasn't, but he's actually looked decent. Like the velocity's been up, and I'm not expecting saves from him at this point, but. Yeah, you kind of live with those relievers in an NL only if they're not getting saves. The one person I'm probably going to cut this week is Andrew Miller just because he's had a couple of shaky outings. And I think that's a slot where I can kind of speculate on somebody and hope for the best.
Yeah, I like that. Made any trades yet? Has anybody traded yet in this league?
No trades yet. Labor is usually quieter with trading, and Labor NL in particular, I've noticed. Than the other leagues I'm in. Like I know Tad AL, which I know we'll get to. There's usually a handful of trades every year. And, you know, part of it in labor is you can't trade fab, and that kind of makes it tougher because, you know, when you're about to cut somebody, it's always easier to go, hey, I'll give you a dollar fab or, you know, I'll give you a couple bucks. Can't do that here. So makes it a little bit tougher.
It does. It does. And that's the thing about some of these leagues. I mean, this is an old school league, old school rules. You can't even do shuttle up and down. The only way you can bench a guy is if he's an original reserve or if he gets sent down. You can put him on the DL if he's been, or, you know, the IL if he's been put on the IL by his big league club. But you're afforded a lot less latitude, and that's a big deal in the NL. It means you have to either cut a guy when he's got his Coors Field start or just take your medicine.
Yeah, and it affects your draft strategy too. The one thing I worried about with stars and scrubs was on the pitching side for that reason. Mm-hmm. You know, I had so many pitchers. You know, I mentioned Chad Kuhl, but like David Peterson, you know, Adrian Hauser, you know, just a lot of those pitchers at a buck or two where it's like, yeah, I better be right because if I'm not, it's ride or die. And part of the strategy is I took a lot of starting pitchers on reserve for that reason. Not even so much for the flexibility of those pitchers, but just to be like, okay, well, you know, if Peterson or Kuhl don't work out, I have somebody behind them that I can shuttle in, you know, and then, you know, pick someone else up to kind of hope that they're the next in line.
Right. That's right. Finally, the one league we're in together is AL Tout Wars. And last year, you were more of a spread the risk guy. I don't think you were that this year, if I recall correctly, though.
Yeah, no, well, last year, remember, I did the nine reliever strategy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I thought about doing it this year, but I decided not to, although I did build my prices to kind of be contingent for it. I think I wound up spending 54 on pitching. It is more of a stars and scrubs. I got Mike Trout for 50, but I also got Luis Robert or Robert. I'm still not sure which for 28. It's Robert. But yeah, it's closer to stars and scrubs. Like, it's not quite as heavy. Probably the big mistake I made there is I kind of wish I had another like high quality middle infielder. I've got Freddie Galvis and Jose Iglesias, and I know they'll play, but it's ugly. And I'm currently in last in large part because I had two early injuries in Luke Voit and Kyle Lewis. And Teoscar Hernandez is currently on the COVID IL. So bad start, but also injuries have played a bit of a part in that. Although some is Lodi Tavares has just been rough. And truthfully, if not for the injuries, he'd be on my bench. He's up because I was kind of like, well, I'm hoping he steals, but he has like one steal. And yeah, he just looks brutal. I think if there were minor leagues, he'd be there right now.
He set the tone on opening day with, I think, four strikeouts and five plate appearances. It hasn't gotten better since.
I've watched him. He just looks lost. Like, he just doesn't look like Kesson Hiura looked lost the first week and a half. I've seen signs that Hiura might break out. Like, he's not swinging everything. He's taking some walks. He's taking pitches that are borderline. He's like, well, I shouldn't swing at this. Leody's not doing that. Like, he's just swinging at everything and looks terrible.
He does indeed. Maybe we can find a way to make a trade here. I'm thoroughly average in that league so far, middle of the pack. Three, you know, Bloomfield, Glennon, Rick, and Liss are all kind of you're kind of trading first place on a daily basis. Those are the three teams. I'm just pretty mediocre in that league. Hopefully it'll change.
Like I said, I don't think I have a last place team. I think the bigger concern I have here is, you know, because I didn't spend a lot on pitching, I need somebody to step forward. And, you know, Jesús Luzardo, who I spent the most on, has kind of been up and down and hasn't been very good. And here again, I didn't spend on closers, but because I took Merriweather on reserve, and because I took Brian Garcia as a couple saves, I'm actually not, you know, completely sucking wind in saves and, you know, have a little bit there.
Yeah. I think that's the play there. I'm hoping Cesar Valdez gets me a few and Liam Hendricks actually starts getting more saves, and then I can have some flexibility there. So we'll see about that. So that's kind of a industry-wide update on some of our leagues. Mike, what are you doing at BP these days?
I'm still doing the Fab review, although this year I'm focusing more on a TGFBI just because it's like a league of leagues. And I think Tout and Labor, while they're interesting, sometimes it's too much inside baseball. TGFBI, because there's so many people playing, it's more interesting to look at like what 28 or 29 different leagues are doing. And then I'm just doing like a kind of a weekly like freestyle column. This week's column just was sort of my usual, like, it's really early, like, don't panic, don't overreact. Although I did make the point, like, you can trade. I think sometimes people are afraid to trade in April. I don't think you should be. Like, if you have a deficiency and, you know, a reasonable person to work with you, there's no reason not to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's always tough, like, making those cuts early on, especially TGFBI, NFBC, where you have no DL slots. You have to actually make that decision. Okay, I got this injured guy. Do I stash him, or do I try to make it through? It's not always easy to do.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, TGFBI is tough because there's no, you know, Labor and Tout, there's that unlimited IL, so you can just stash and stash and stash. You don't even have an IL in NFBC formats or TGFBI, so you have three or four injuries early. You know, obviously, if it's someone like Mondesi, who I mentioned before, you're going to keep him. But like I cut Jordan Hicks because I'm like, well, honestly, I get it. He'd be a closer in a month, but I can't like wait a month on him when those reserve slots are precious.
He's sitting on my reserves in TGFBI right now as we speak.
Yes,
I fully understand that pressure.
Well, for me, I stashed Bobby Witt there, so it was a kind of a decision between Witt and Hicks, and I was like, you know what, I'd rather wait on Hicks. Witt a couple weeks and see what happens there.
I have both Hicks and Pomerantz, by the way, and you know, and Alvarado on my bench, and Wade Davis. I need to I was hoping one of those would get a little bit more definition and I could roll with it there and cut the other, but we'll see.
But you know, Pomerantz is useful because even like a bad six starter in a 15 team mix, I'd almost rather roll with Pomerantz. And particularly early, like early on when relievers are getting more wins, like left and right, you might get lucky with a win. Like you were mentioning Pagan before. In the one league I had Pagan, like getting those two wins early from him was, I wanted the saves, but those wins were nice.
Wins are so precious. It's amazing. When you do projections in early, in draft season, you add two wins to a guy's projection. It's not adding $2 to his projection. It's adding like 10 or maybe I'm overstating it. It's adding five. It's a big bump. It's not just like, win equals $1. It's more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those wins are gold. And I think I've heard you and Fred or someone else on your podcast talk about this. Like we lose so many wins now and saves to like free agency where just nobody gets them. Mm-hmm. So if you manage to have that, like, Pomerantz win in your active roster as opposed to your bench, that's huge.
Indeed it is. And you have the podcast as well.
Yep, Flags Fly Forever. Me, John Hagelin, my co-host, who's also in TGFBI and Tout, and quite a good player. He was he won his TGFBI and was in that League of Champions. And then Samuel Hales, our producer. So yeah, we do that every week in season.
And what day is that up?
It's usually on Fridays. We record Thursdays. I'll actually be recording that tonight. Hopefully, my voice is not too hoarse at that time after doing the show with you.
I appreciate you doing that. Mike, great stuff as always. Great to catch back up with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Hope to be on again soon.
You bet. Mike Gianella, everybody. Obviously, check him out at Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Gianella. And listen to Flags Fly Forever. This has been the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We do appreciate you. And we'll be back at you again tomorrow with Todd Zola and Clay Link with Two Start Starters. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.